Well, good morning, fellow travelers. This is the car guru, Lenny Lawson, a real live new car dealer, just like the announcer said. And I was in the process of being a real live new car dealer just a little while ago as I was visiting with my Nissan regional manager. He came to visit. And it was occasionally the big wheels, the big shots will come down from their perches and kind of associate with us people on the front lines. And I'm glad they do because they help us to understand some things that are going on in the market. You know, we can't see things always from the other person's perspective. Sometimes that's a healthy thing to do. It opens our eyes to things that we were complaining about. And then when all of a sudden we realize, well, you know, they don't really have authority or control over that either. So we're kind of partners in it. And that's, we talked a lot about the chip shortage, you know, about the fact that the model has changed as to the way car dealers are working. I think a lot of businesses have because of the, you know, the way the labor pool has changed. The difficulty in finding workers, the labor participation percentages, where a lot of people just got out of the labor force and they're not counted when it comes to the unemployment rate. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they're, you know, take up gardening or, you know, how they're supporting themselves. I don't know if there are public subsidies that help people survive when they just say, hey, I'm going to stop working. Or they start, you know, maybe finding other ways to make a living, making arts and crafts and such, you know, using Pinterest and Facebook Marketplace to market products and services. Kind of get off the grid a little bit. Sometimes I wish I could get off the grid a little bit, but, you know, that's a fleeting thought. But, you know, again, the constraints that are on the industry now are mostly supply-oriented. The reason you can't go to Johnson City Honda and find, you know, 300 cars in inventory is the same reason you can't find it at Champion Chevrolet or, you know, Fairway Ford or wherever. This is going to be a continuing thing. We're going to see, according to my Nissan rep, whereas normally the district or the region would have somewhere around 300,000 vehicles in inventory, okay? The model now says they're going to have about half that, 150,000. So, you know, if you have a dealer in Johnson City that used to have 200 cars, well, he's going to have 100 cars in stock. They're trying to get it to where the dealer will turn their entire inventory every 45 to 60 days. 45 is going to be the fastest standard, and 60 is going to be the slowest standard. And if you are beyond that, then your allocations from the factory will suffer. You won't get as many cars. So, you know, like right now, we have more sold orders than we ever have had in our history. And I don't know that we're going to get them all, especially in the 22 model year. It's very possible there will be 23 models. And it's also very possible that the people that have been waiting for their 22 models won't wait. And they'll go try to find something else. But, you know, all of this, you would think, well, since there aren't as much, there is not as much inventory out there, that you wouldn't think that General Motors and Ford would probably be expected to have the highest profit that they've had in decades. But that's going to be the case for 2021 earnings. They're going to be announced this week. And, you know, they're going to show very profitable years. You're going to see some of the, well, if you had access to the numbers, you would see that it's been a profitable year for new car dealers, too, because, you know, while we haven't sold as many cars as we have, most of the transaction prices have been higher. And inventories have been lower, which means that the carrying cost, the floor plan that we have to pay, the interest that we have to pay on the cars that we have in stock, we haven't been having to pay it, you know, because we haven't had the inventory. And that's reduced our overall costs. So it's helped us as car dealers be more profitable. You know, as far as consumers, you know, the downside, is, as I've said many times, is going to be that there aren't going to be the big rebates that you're used to. Don't be surprised if you go in and to look at a Chevy Traverse, or, well, they probably still have rebates on that thing, but that's a bad example. Some other vehicle that would normally have $2,000 or $3,000 in rebates on it has zero, none, nada. And that makes it tough on somebody that's used to having a big discount on the car and a big rebate. But the upside is the trade value, and that's going to continue. Folks, don't worry about your trade values plummeting anytime soon. They are going to hang up there or stay up there for some time. I don't think you have anything to worry about even in the next year and a half. Your invested dollars in your vehicle out there in your driveway, it's not going down in value. So, you know, you just don't settle for too little, is all I'm saying. Start to see more and more customers sell their own vehicles, sell their trades, and then go out and buy. Just keep in mind, if you do that, at least get a couple offers from dealers. Find out what they'll pay you for your car, because sometimes they'll pay you retail for it before you sell it to somebody. Plus, if you sell it to an individual and you don't use it as a trade-in, you don't get the sales tax credit. And in the state of Tennessee, that's about 9% that you're going to be, well, not quite that, probably 7.5% that you're going to be paying in sales tax on your purchase, on the full purchase price. In Tennessee, if you have a trade-in, that is deducted first, and you pay sales tax on the difference. So that's a good way, a good reason to trade your vehicle. Remember also that if you are in a leased vehicle, you might want to think about leasing again. The residual value, get this now, listen carefully. The residual value is what, you know, if you're going to lease a Nissan Frontier, for example, and let's say it lists for $30,000. The residual value at the end of the lease is what the lease company is saying your vehicle is going to be worth as a percentage of the original selling price when you turn the car in at the end of the lease. The residual value on an 18-month lease, and you can do an 18-month lease right now on a Nissan Frontier, on the, I think it's the four-door, four-wheel drive base model that we have, the residual value is 99%. In other words, they are anticipating that, or basically the formula for the lease is based on the fact that the car will only depreciate 1%. So 1% of $30,000 is $300. So you divide $300 by 18, that is not your, exactly your payment, but it's close. All, only thing you have to add to that is the money factor, which is minimal right now. You can lease a Nissan Frontier for right at $100 a month total. And that's on a, I think, a 12,000 mile a year lease. That's a pretty cheap payment. We haven't had payments like that since the 70s. So it's definitely worth considering to lease a vehicle right now. Get a lease payment. You know, if you do have a trade-in, I would just lease the car and let them buy your trade. They'll give you the cash for it, and then you can take that cash and, you know, if you have some high-interest credit cards or something else that you want to pay off, you want to put it on your house, you want to invest it, you know, buy some Tesla stock or something, then take that money and do something else with it and then lease that car, that Nissan Frontier, for 18 months. Now, 18 months isn't a very long lease. I mean, that'll fly by. You might want to think about extending that term to maybe 36 months. The residual value is going to go down, but it's still going to be at record highs right now. So the industry does not think that this used car market is going to really go down anytime soon. So feel some comfort there. Do you feel all warm and fuzzy inside? I hope you do. We'll take our first break and be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. You know, a lot of people are already planning for the summer, spring, and thinking about their travel plans. Are you? Have you thought about buying a camper lately? You know, a lot of people do this time of year. They think about the fact that they got tired of sleeping in tents all the time, or they want to upgrade from a travel trailer to a fifth wheel. And, you know, as you think about those kind of things, you have to also consider What are you going to pull it with? Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is that one of the shortest supply vehicle lines is heavy-duty trucks right now. Heavy-duty trucks are hard to get, harder to get than just about anything else. And so before you make big plans about buying a fifth wheel or a larger travel trailer, you need to make sure that the truck that you have will handle it, because it's very possible that you won't be able to find what you want. Now, at one point in time, you could go to a dealership lot and see it sitting there. You could go to a Ford dealer, Chevy dealer, whatever, a Ram dealer, and find that extended or crew cab dually pickup truck with four-wheel drive and all the things that you needed, you know, that 18,000-pound towing capacity or whatever. They're just not out there right now. And on a used car market, they're even thinner. If you do find one, you're paying pretty much retail. I was trying to buy a transit van for a good customer of mine. Matter of fact, he wanted three. Now, that's the big Ford cargo van. It has a mid-height roof and has a long wheelbase. And so he wanted three of them. And I started looking and found that Hertz, you know, the rental car company, had a whole bunch of them. So I started checking the prices. Vehicles with anywhere from 80 to 120,000 miles, that Hertz is asking over what they listed for new. Extremely short supply. So this could negatively impact the camper industry as well, because people aren't going to be able to upgrade because they can't buy the trucks. There's a lot of people that go out there and buy, make a commitment to buy a camper, and then they say, okay, I need a truck to pull this. Or they buy a truck or, you know, own a truck already that is not adequate, you know, for the load that they would like to have. So it's so important to put the two transactions together, but it's going to be really hard when you can't get the trucks. I don't know what the availability of campers is anyway. You know, I went out to this beautiful dealership out at exit 23 near Greenville. It's called Tri-Am RV, I believe. And their inventory was worse than my inventory at the dealership. Very low inventories of vehicles. You know, there's a Lazy Days, I think, down there at Strawberry Plains, and they look pretty full, but still much less than what they normally carry. So, you know, just making sure that the availability is out there before you make a commitment, I think that's a very important thing to do right now. Not having adequate towing capacity can create a world of problems. It's not just being able to pull it, it's being able to stop it. You know, let's say that you're driving at a reasonable speed and a pedestrian steps off the curb in front of your truck. Because you're overweight, you're going to have a really hard time stopping. The velocity basically created by the momentum of your rear heavy trailer and or boat could overcome the stopping power of your brakes and could lead to some tragic circumstances. But in addition to not being able to stop, exceeding your vehicle's towing capacity could also lead to something called swaying. This occurs when the towed load begins to move side to side, independently of the direction in which it's being towed by your truck. I've had this happen to me before, where the truck is just not able to stabilize the load. Now, they make attachments that you can use to help control that, but a lot of people don't get good advice when they buy a trailer, and they're not prepared when something like that happens. Another thing that inadequate towing capacity does is that it could damage your transmission, and those are expensive. Transmissions are designed to work hard enough to move the vehicle that they power, as well as any additional weight up to the limits that are specified by the manufacturer. Now, if you exceed those limits, not only will you void your factory warranty, but it causes the transmission to have to work harder than it's meant to. You know, a lot of vehicles with a high towing capacity have transmission oil coolers that are built into the radiator, and they will keep that transmission fluid cool. You know, that's critical to being able to maintain the life of the transmission if you do a lot of towing. But the transmission fluid gets hot, it breaks down, and without proper lubrication, the transmission can seize up and cause major damage, and you're talking about a pretty expensive repair. Now, when I hook up my trailer, which is 34 feet long, I think it weighs 7,500 pounds dry, unloaded. So, you know, I don't know exactly how much all the stuff weighs that we put in it. You know, less than 1,000 pounds, I'm sure. But still, if I put it on my F-150, the back of my F-150 will sag some. And that's not a good way to go down the road. That's why I use a weight distribution hitch. And it really increases the ability of my vehicle to tow due to the weight being distributed among the vehicles, all the wheels that are involved, the wheels on the trailer and the wheels on the truck. Now, I'm pulling a travel trailer, which hooks to a hitch on the back of the truck. A lot of people use a fifth wheel and a fifth wheel hitch that goes in the back of the bed of the truck. And it basically is centered over the rear axle. Now, one of the things you have to be careful of there is that you have a truck with a long bed. You need at least an 8-foot bed. Some people try to do it with a 6.5-foot bed on a pickup truck, but if you turn too deeply with a fifth wheel trailer, you could actually turn the corners of your travel trailer, your fifth wheel, into your cab of your truck. And I've even seen rear windows get shattered because they took too deep of a turn and the bed wasn't long enough. There's not enough distance between the center of the rear axle and the back of the cab. So it's critical to understand the type of trailer that you're going to buy. I mean, if you're into camping, you know, really think about how often are we really going to use this? I tell you what, every time I tried to make a reservation, you know, within even 30 days of the time I intended to go camping, which is about how much lead time I have. I mean, but the planning is kind of tight in my family with all the grandkids and stuff like that, trying to coordinate everybody's schedules, you know what I mean. If I tried to make a reservation within 30 days, I could forget it. I mean, you have to plan way ahead. And camping is really big right now. It was at least during the pandemic. Last year was almost impossible. And so what kind of camping are you going to do? I mean, there is no reason to spend the big money on a fifth wheel unless you're going to camp a lot, because they're expensive and, you know, they're very cumbersome. And so where are you going to park it? You know, are you going to store it? I had a guy rent some space for me in one of my miniature warehouses. I have about a 3,000 square foot building that just has a concrete floor, and I leased him space, and that thing stayed in there the entire spring and summer. I called him. I said, "When are you going to go camping?" He said, "We just haven't been able to figure out a time when we can do it. You know, we can all get together." So, you know, the reality of owning a camper is sometimes a lot more difficult than the thought of it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just, it just looks like so much fun, and we're going to go do this all the time, and then just people's schedules don't work out, or you can't get campgrounds, and the cost involved is significant when it comes to all the equipment. Don't get me wrong. I love camping. I really do enjoy it. I like hooking up my camper and pulling it and having all the stuff in there, and, you know, packing and unpacking is a pain, but you know, it's just when we go to a campground, our family does things that we wouldn't normally do if we just went to a hotel and, you know, swam at the pool and stuff like that. We ride bikes, we fish. I always build a campfire. We talk more, we play cards. You know, it's just, I don't know, it's just a great way to vacate and to get away from all the technology. Yeah, my camper has a 42-inch flat-screen TV in it, but we rarely turn it on. And most of the time we're outside. If the kids want to stay inside, we say, no, we're going outside. And they enjoy themselves very much. I feel safer with them riding their bikes around in a campground than I do, you know, in a neighborhood. So, you know, I'm a big fan of camping, so don't get me wrong. I just want to make sure that when folks think about doing it, there's a lot of used campers out there that where people thought that they were going to use them, and then they end up realizing that what a chore it is. And if you're older like me, it's pretty hard work, you know, getting one set up, especially if it doesn't have automatic leveling on it. You've got to use boards, and you've got to make sure that thing is secure and tied down. And there's a lot of work involved in getting one set up once you get to the campground. Ask anybody who camps, they'll tell you. But you've got to look at it as just the beginning of an adventure, and that's what makes it all fun. I'm going to take our last break, be back here in just a second. You know, if you grew up camping and you just love the outdoor experience and you don't mind being in a campground really close to other people, and, you know, I've found also that the people in the campground are just extremely neighborly, and they talk to you and you know, willing to pitch in and help you and stuff like that. But if you grew up like that, then you're probably going to like camping. But if you've always stayed in hotels and always eaten at nice restaurants, and when you go on trips, and, you know, you just like the luxury of a beautiful JW Marriott, you're not going to like camping. I don't care if you're in a 40-foot motorhome built by Prevost that cost $1.2 million. If you don't have camping in your blood, you're not going to like it, and that thing's going to be on RV Trader faster than you could say Yankee Doodle. Camping is a big commitment, and just make sure that you are committed to use it. Develop a plan. Think about it. Rent one first. Go on a big camp. You know, you can rent RVs all the time, and they're not cheap, but it's a great way to figure out whether that's really something that you want to do. So I appreciate you listening to this edition of My Car Guru. If I can help you in any way, don't hesitate to call 423-552-2020, and we will see you next time.